Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. On the show today, we're talking books, and on our reading list, we have three very different works covering fiction, non-fiction, and verse. We'll dive into Clover Stroud's new memoir, rifle through a collection of short stories called The Refugees, and crack open a new volume of poetry by Jacob Polley. I'm joined in the studio by John Mitchinson, co-founder of Unbound Publishing. John, welcome to the show. We're going to start with The Wild Other, a memoir penned by author and journalist Clover Stroud. This is a quite extraordinary book charting an extraordinary life. Talk us through some of the main beats of this memoir.
It is an extraordinary memoir, and it's a memoir about, I guess, about the relationship that one has with nature, with animals. The spirit animal in this book is the horse, and Clover lives under the white horse, the famous Iron Age chalk white horse in Uffington. But how she got there, I guess, is really the story of this book. She grew up in sort of idyllic surroundings, I guess, Oxford, and then moving out to Mynty in Wiltshire with her extended family, her sister, Rick, her dad, and Charlotte, her mum, and the three siblings from her mum's first marriage. And then in 1991, when Clover's a teenager, disaster strikes. Her mum, who's a keen, who's really the early stages of the book are about incredibly close relationship that Clover and her mum, Clover being the youngest particularly, had with her mum. And the evocation of her daughter's, the smell of Chanel No. 5, the feel of her mum's hair on her face, the warmth, the generosity which Rick and Charlotte brought to everything that they did. Kind of, she says, I think at one point, that her childhood was like one of those kind of kids' novels where everybody lives in the country and rides ponies. But then in 1991, her mum has a riding accident in which she is paralysed and goes into a coma, within which she stays for the next 22 years. So completely devastating for all the children, and I think particularly also for Clover. And then she sort of starts and negotiates, obviously tells the story, that terrible story and what she felt. And it's an exquisitely written book. It's full of grief, but also full of kind of sort of salty kind of detail of truth. I mean, Clover, I think, would be the first to say she kind of goes off the rails. Not exactly off the rails, but she goes, she lives with gypsies in Ireland. She goes and works on a ranch in Texas. She ends up running away with a Cossack from her sister's circus and living in Ossetia. She has, in the end, she has children to different men through the book. There's a lot of sex, a lot of longing, a lot of grief. She says that the thing that happened to her, the trauma that happened to her, that thing that she carried around through her life. So that it's a book about trauma. The thing that happened, and also the grief. How do you come to terms with something that terrible? And I guess the story, the payoff of the story is she falls in love with an old friend, and Pete, who brings her back from the various brinks, brings her sort of wild other back into her life and enables her to start riding again. The writing about horses and the connection with horses, the smell of horses, the feeling of exultation when you're riding on the downs. It's an incredibly joyous book, despite being obviously the narrative of a very, very terrible and damaging event. So, it's one of those things. Once you get kind of, once you get into the saddle, it's very, very hard to stop reading. She's a wonderful, wonderful writer. I mean, I know her a little bit for years back when she worked in a bookshop that I was nominally in charge of in Oxford. She's Clover's extraordinary, but this is the book, I suppose, that you kind of hoped she would always write about, the great disfiguring sort of trauma of her mother. And the scenes when her mother eventually dies are as moving a passage as I've read in a book in a very, very long time. So highly, highly recommended.
You sort of alluded to it there, the wild other from the title. What does that refer to? I mean, does that refer to, the wild side of everyone?
Well, I think yes, there's the sort of the cliché going off the rails being wild. But I think it's also that relationship. What saves her in the end are two things. One is the love of Pete, who somehow loves her enough to know that she's... That the wildness that she sort of rejected because she feels that she's endangered the lives of her children and she has been sinking into depression, that actually it's some strange way it's about balance. We all have that other. We all have that person who's there that has the capacity to destroy us. But I guess if the book, it's far too subtle and beautifully written a book to have a message, it is that you have to embrace that. And the passages towards the end, again, when she's rediscovered the joy of riding, the thing that's consistently been through her life, but which she stopped doing for a while when she had young children, and that sense of the need to embrace it, but to embrace it in such a way as that you're not just letting go, you're not just falling apart. So I guess we do all have. And I think the relationship with nature and with landscape, which will come up in at least one of the other books we're talking about, is a sort of a fundamental human need. And it's a book about growing up. I mean, in the end, when her mother dies, I think she is released. And she's at the end of the book, she's pregnant with her fifth child. So it's a very positive and hopeful ending. But you have to go through some fairly traumatic stuff to get there.
The Wild Other, a memoir by Clover Stroud, is out now, published by Hodder & Stoughton. Let's move on now to a collection of 8 short stories dedicated to refugees everywhere, written by Viet Thanh Nguyen. Simply called The Refugees, this is the eagerly awaited second work by Nguyen after his first novel, The Sympathizer, won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction last year. John, first of all, tell us what you liked about this collection.
What I loved about it was it's a very simple idea. You take 8 stories, each of which inspired by refugees, each of them, I guess, from Vietnam. But without the pyrotechnics, which sort of, I mean, were pretty glorious in his Pulitzer Prize winning, the Sympathizers, this is an incredibly quiet but devastating collection about what the experience of being forcibly removed or ejected from home and having to rebuild one's life in a completely different country entails. So the stories are all quite quiet. There's none of the sort of verbal dynamics, but they're all in their own way. It is like a sort of a prism, you know, you're kind of getting each different, and they're not all from the point of view of the refugees. There's a particularly moving one where the point of view is a black American former Air Force officer who has dropped bombs in Vietnam, who's going back to Vietnam with his Japanese wife and his daughter and her Vietnamese boyfriend. And that's it just has absolute, it seemed to me that it's absolute pitch perfect emotional tone. Each story adds to the next. And by the end of it, you are, I guess it is on one level devastating, but like all the best fiction, you're also uplifted by it. The kind of the quiet heroism of a lot of the narrators in the stories. He doesn't really, in any of the stories, dwell on the horror. The horror is all alluded to. The things that people have survived, you know, the evacuation from Saigon, the horrors of being a, you know, on a boat and watching your brother drown. The first story, in a way, sets the tone. Black Eyed Woman, where a woman is visited by the ghost of her dead brother, brilliantly realised, I mean, not at all supernatural. She has become a ghostwriter. That's what she does. She ghostwrites the memoirs of people who've lived through traumatic experiences. But she is herself almost a ghost herself. There's almost nothing. You know, she was, from what you gather from the story, raped and very badly treated, watched her brother die in front of her. But the return of her brother is very moving, the way the story. So I just thought it was at a moment when we're trying to recover. It did for me very much the same thing that The Good Immigrant, the book that Unbound, my publishing house, has done. It's taken that experience, the experience of otherness, again, connects back to the last book, and makes it into something very approachable and humanly intelligible. I mean, put it this way, anybody who reads this book is going to find it a lot more difficult to blithely write off the, you know, the recent ruling on not allowing refugee children into the country. I mean, there are lots of the, you know, classic Wordsworthian small unremembered acts of kindness from the people who work with the UNRWA. There's a fabulous story about a young Vietnamese entrepreneur who ends up forming a relationship with a Spanish, elderly Spanish, Hispanic American businessman, because his father has died and donated the Spanish businessman his liver. So this Spanish businessman's almost got a bit of Vietnamese inside him. And that's brilliantly done quite unexpected, and there is humour in the book. It's not unremittingly grim at all. I just thought it was sort of pitch perfect bit of writing. And he's a really exciting writer, I think, and doing things with fiction that you would hope that it's not all just sort of, you know, coming from academics in universities. He's playful, but also can write. These are kind of classic, in a funny kind of way, American short stories.
And it's interesting. I mean, these short stories were written over a period of 20 years, which seems astonishing.
Yeah, given the kind of evenness of tone.
Well, I was going to say, how does he achieve that? Because obviously it's not his, you know, the sympathiser was, as you say, there were more verbal dynamics there. Some people talked about syntactical virtuosity in that work. How do you do that? How do you, over the period of 20 years, keep that same voice?
I guess it's a little bit like that thing of, you know, when you look at Picasso's drawings, you know, the guy can really draw. And I feel that these are beautifully finished, sort of left-hand exercises, where he started with a character and he's almost broken down the refugee experience. And so from inside and outside. And I mean, one suspects that he probably winnowed this down from a lot of other stories to get this. It feels like a very balanced collection. And I think your kind of sense when you get to the end of it, and the final stories is particularly moving and beautiful one. You've got youth, you've got age, you've got the sort of the seven ages. It's a very satisfying collection. And I think without being even remotely however one knows about the Vietnam War and about the status of Vietnamese community, you learn a tremendous amount about it in the pages of the book.
The Refugees by Viet Tan Nguyen is published by Grove Press. Finally, we're going to end today's show by leafing through Jack Self, a book of poetry by one of Britain's finest poets, Jacob Polley, which won him the T.S. Eliot Prize for Poetry in 2016. John, explain the meaning of the title here and the kind of clever device Polley uses to link these poems together.
Well, the kind of the clue to the title is in a little line from Gerald Manry Hopkins, who's one of, I think, Polley's kind of go-to poets. This is if you like the brilliance of the imagery, the imagistic brilliance of Hopkins, then you're going to love Jacob Polley. So the line is, soul, self, semicolon, come, poor Jack Self. And Jack Self is, you know, I guess it's a sort of an everyman. The conceit is that he takes each of the poems is another aspect of what you might call Jackness. So you've got The House That Jack Built, first extraordinary poem, Jack Sprat, you've got Applejack, you've got Blackjack, you've got Jack-o'-lantern, you've got, right the way through, you've got Jack Snipe, you've got Skipjack, which is the fish, Spring-heel Jack, right through to the end to Jack of Bedlam. So it's why I wouldn't normally kind of bring a poetry book onto the mainstream, but this is, I just found this so exciting because it tells a story. I mean, very broadly, it's set in a Cumbrian, kind of a very mystical old Cumbrian village called Lammenby, and Jack Self has a friend called Jeremy Wren, and Jeremy Wren dies. I mean, this is not it's not a novel,
no. Okay.
But what you get is the haunting of Jack Self by Jeremy Wren, and I just think formally, It's such a beautiful conceit. It has elements of... I was reminded of Russell Hoban's brilliant novel, Ridley Walker. I was reminded of Mr. Punch, a collection of about 20 years ago by David Harsant. But I think people have said it's a book that you need to read in... You need to read each of the poems in sequence, and you need to read... If you can, read them aloud. There is a sort of a nursery rhyme kind of feel to it. I mean, I was just trying to find a really good... The second is called Every Creeping Thing. And here's you get a sense of this sort of great... I mean, it's on one level, it's extremely traditional, but the landscape and the quality of the imagery and his ability to go from, you know, ancient Alice Oswald kind of evocation of landscape to modern kind of schoolroom is fun to read. So I'll read a little bit just to give you the flavour. All the doors must have their way, and every break of day its day. Instead of a soul, Jack's self has a coal, and the high fireman to pay. By headless powder, paraquat, snap, dragon, snap, and rat-a-tat-tat, who's at the door of the door of the door? It's Jack Self in his toadskin hat.
So you have a lot of the kind of, the cadence of fairy tale, of nursery rhyme there.
Yeah, and there's Jack Sprat and Jack Shit in there as well. I mean, it's just one of those books that I felt was, I will reread it. I read it quite quickly. I loved it. I'll go back to it. It's something that you absolutely, that sense of reading it, at the joy of having poetry that you can read and where you're always not quite. I mean, for me, poetry is always, if you get it the first time round, you know, you're reading it wrong. And that, I think, I've not read any of Jacob Polley's work. I know he won the T.S. Eliot Prize for this book, and I can see why. I think it's original. If you're trying to find a way back into poetry, if maybe you've not read a lot of contemporary poetry, I couldn't recommend this more highly, I have to say. Really, really, a great discovery.
Jack Self is out now, published by Picador. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, John Mitchinson. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer today was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow for our film review. But for now, thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.